When it comes to weight loss, no two people are the same. That's why Noom builds personalized plans based on your unique psychology and biology. Take Brittany. After years of unsustainable diets, Noom helped her lose 20 pounds and keep it off.
I was definitely in a yo-yo cycle for years of just losing weight, gaining weight, and it was exhausting.
And Stephanie. She's a former D1 athlete who knew she couldn't out-train her diet, and she lost 38 pounds.
My relationship to food before Noom was never consistent.
And Evan, he can't stand salads, but he still lost 50 pounds with Noom.
I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. Even through the pickiness, Noom taught me that building better habits builds a healthier lifestyle. I'm not doing this to get to a number. I'm doing this to feel better.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom users compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Did you see McCole Hardnose an answer on a Jeopardy question?
No, that's cool.
I don't know if Ken Jennings is like a sports guy. I don't really know a ton about him, I guess. But
is anybody on Jeopardy a sports guy?
Well, the funny part is usually not. And if someone comes on to Jeopardy and they actually know sports, like they clean up a sports category if it comes up. It's so funny because there's a lot of good, like just Instagram videos and stuff of one person being like, yeah, you guys, none of you watch sports? Like, and in this one, the question was, forgotten or remembered forever, this player recently caught the Super Bowl or the game-winning touchdown in the Super Bowl, and the first guy buzzed in and goes, Kelsey? And he goes, no, Kelsey was watching him on the Jumbotron. It was McCole Hardman. And everyone was like, who?
Welcome in to It's Always Sunny in Chiefs Kingdom. I'm Austin. Find me on Twitter /X at Real Bird Lawyer, on Blue Sky, Bird Law Expert. Here with me is always my co-host Taylor at Taylor _Witt on Twitter /X, on Blue Sky, Taylor M. Witt. What is going on, buddy?
Watched one of the greatest basketball players of our generation dice and slice her way to the Final Four earlier tonight. Caitlin Clark dropped 41 points on LSU. That girl is unbelievable. Like, I know you're not into the amateur basketball thing, but like, she drops half court threes constantly. Like, it's just she's a completely different player than anybody else other than Steph Curry that I've really ever seen.
I care a lot more about Caitlin Clark than I've ever cared about
a
men's amateur basketball player, and couldn't happen to a nicer opponent either. Oh, Kim Mulkey got sent packing.
That's right.
We got a great show for you guys. It is a Monday. So I feel like we should address the elephant in the room, which is that we last recorded and released an episode on March 21st. And the reason for that is because I was in Kansas City this last weekend just to hang out. And so there's obviously been a lot of news that has happened since the last time we recorded the show. Jerry Sneed got traded, Rashee Rice got in the whole thing. So we're going to address all of that and more in the news. And then we're going to hit the next great American dynasty. We have year two of Patrick Mahomes in the playoffs. For those of you who don't know, this segment is about every playoff game in the Patrick Mahomes era. We last episode addressed one of the three losses, the most palatable three losses, overtime against the Patriots in the AFC Championship game in the 2018 season. And now we're into 2019. And this one's got a great ending, but we got to kick it off first, of course, with the Houston Texans coming to Arrowhead. So let's hit the news. Well, it finally happened, and we've had a little bit of time to process it. Legarius Sneed, no longer Kansas City Chief. He was traded on the 23rd to the Tennessee Titans for a 2024 seventh round pick swap, which does end up with the Chiefs getting a pick about 20 spots higher than their original seventh round selection, and then a 2025 third round pick. Legarius Sneed gets the bag from Tennessee, 4-year deal worth $76.4 million. That's $55 million in guaranteed money and $20 million signing bonus. So this obviously was motivated by, let's get this out of the way, it was obviously motivated by the contract. The Chiefs obviously were under the cap. They were compliant, but they didn't have a whole lot of wiggle room, and they clearly preferred not to play Legarius Sneed on the tag, and we can speculate and we'll speculate about why that might be, but your initial thoughts about the trade?
Bummed. I mean, from the standpoint that I really like Sneed as a player, he obviously was a good fit for the culture of the team. He was an absolute dog out there on everybody's best cornerback. I mean, arguably the best cornerback in football this year. I know there are different arguments and metrics to be made for a couple guys, but he was right up there. And he also kind of got snubbed on some of his awards stuff. I mean, you know, no Pro Bowl, no All Pro, no any of that stuff, but he did come away with the last laugh of the Super Bowl win. And then the next biggest laugh, which is the bag. And so, I mean, I'm glad he got paid. I know he earned it. It just bummed me out. I didn't want to see him go, and I didn't want to see him go for only a third round pick.
Yeah. We'll talk about the compensation in a minute, but yeah, I mean, it's tough because there's obviously a lot of, I feel like a growing amount of vocal discontent among Chiefs fans about Clark Hunt.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think the last couple of years, and obviously he's been in the news lately for the, did he promise to renovate the practice facility locker room? Did he not promise it? He comes out and says, you got an F minus from the players, right? Like, and I feel like that was a big wake up call for Chiefs fans, a lot of us, that, like, you know, I mean, it was pretty hard to find fault with the guy when, you know, we'd won two championships and, you know, obviously this year won a third, and he paid Patrick Mahomes and he got around to paying Chris Jones. So hard to find fault with him, but I do think there's maybe something to the idea that he doesn't like spending a lot of cash up front. And obviously the Chiefs have navigated the cap brilliantly in the Patrick Mahomes, Clark Hunt, Brett Veach, RIP Brant Tillis era. But they have been closer to the bottom in cash spending, not cap spending, but cash spending the last couple of years. And there certainly is, at the very least, a lot of smoke that the Chiefs didn't want to fork over the $20 million in cash this year to have Sneed play on the tag. And then on top of that, do the additional restructures that they probably would have had to do to give them a little bit of breathing space to sign their draft class and have a little bit of money left over to improve the roster in other ways. And so if that is the reason why this happened, and the only reason why it happened, if there was a directive from Clark Hunt that said, hey, you really got to get this Legarius Sneed contract off the books, and it wasn't purely a football move standpoint where they knew they weren't going to pay him long-term, you know, they were concerned about his health, whatever it might be, you know, we want to get a future third round pick. We want to take a swing. That would be unfortunate. And I don't know if that's true or not, but if that were the case, that would be a bummer.
Yeah, it would. It would be the type of move that non-championship teams make,
right?
That the poverty franchises make, like cost cutting, cost saving things that aren't because of the rules of the game. The cap is one thing. I get if somebody has to be a cap casualty because, you know, of the economics of the rules in place for the game, that's fine. But to be cheap and to not want to spend, you know, not want to put enough money in escrow or whatever the case may be, if you want to be an owner that tries to, you know, avoid those types of costs, then don't be expecting to go win every Super Bowl. Like, don't be you know, expect to be a championship caliber team. You have to be one or the other. And we don't know. We don't know any motivations or internal conversations, but just kind of based on where things have been perceived to be from the public, which is, like you said, the F minus, the kind of the lower spending, despite the winning, you know, the Chiefs have been the winningest team in the NFL since Mahomes arrived, and the spending hasn't followed suit with that. So I do think there's legitimate criticism to be laid on Clark Hunt. I think he thinks, I guess, that he doesn't need to spend to win, which I mean, I guess it's kind of hard to argue with. They certainly have won without spending, but we sure would like to something like this, a move like this with Snead. I hope, as you said, it was all football and not much economics.
I have breaking news to interrupt this program.
I love when we have breaking news.
5 minutes ago, the Chiefs signed Carson Wentz as a backup to a 1 year deal.
Sure. Okay.
Sure.
We didn't have a backup. I mean,
we didn't
Blaine Gabbert was gone. I mean, he's in the same mold as Gabbert and Kenny.
Sure.
And he's had
more success than either of those guys.
Well, certainly he was closer to an MVP than either of those two were. Yeah, right. Absolutely. Right. Now, sure, that was 7, 8 years ago.
It was a long time ago.
But I mean, again, that's fine. That's especially if now I'm interested to see what kind of backup quarterback with his pedigree gets. But sure. I mean, it'll probably be similar to what he got for the Rams last year.
Is he the locked in backup, or is there going to be a competition for backup quarterback? We don't know at this time. Let's wrap up this Legarius Sneed conversation because we can't have the whole show get derailed by Carson Wentz signing a 1 year backup contract.
No,
that would be absurd. The compensation is interesting because obviously a future third round pick, I mean, not even a pick in the 2024 draft, other than the seventh round pick swap, is a little bit surprising. I think, you know, this is another thing that we'll never get the full story on. And it's unfortunate, but obviously the Chiefs put it out there a month and a half ago that they were willing to entertain offers for Legarius Sneed. And it's a little bit surprising to me that even because they were under the cap, I mean, like, unless other teams and other front offices are so dialed in on what Clark Hunt is willing to do with the checkbook, they had a path to be able to keep Legarius Sneed on the roster in 2024. And it feels like if this was truly the best offer that they could get, that those other teams they were really convinced that the Chiefs would not play Legarius Sneed on the tag and would not fork over the cash to restructure some of these other deals to get him onto the 2024 roster and keep him on the franchise tag. And maybe they just weren't willing to pay up. I'm not incredibly surprised that, you know, that we didn't get a first round pick for it. You know, that's rare for a defensive back. And there's been a lot of discussion since the trade went down about how teams maybe are not valuing cornerbacks the same way that they did, because cornerbacks aren't being asked to do as much as they used to. I mean, your Darrelle Revis's, you know, those players, if you have them, great, you can still use a guy like that. But teams are playing a lot less man coverage. They're playing a lot more zone. Sneed was obviously, I mean, he was a man cover corner a lot of the time, and he was shadowing, and he was doing a lot, you know, off the ball. And as a blitzer, he was providing a lot of that value. But at the same time, you know, this cornerback production year to year is pretty volatile. It's hard to say, you know, like, I guess at the end of the day, and a lot of people made this point to me a couple of weeks ago when I was complaining about the compensation, like, if they could have done better, they would have done better. I'm not sure that I completely 100% buy that, because it's true that, like, I don't think they had a better offer on the table and said, no, we would like to take the worse offer. I do think that had they been willing to wait, had they been willing to keep him on the tag for another month, getting closer to the draft, you know, letting teams know, you know, maybe throw in a restructure, you know, of Kelsey's contract, or you go back to the Mahomes contract and get a little bit more money from him, you know, maybe show teams that you're willing to, you know, make some adjustments, at least give an indication that, hey, like, we're serious. We actually will keep this guy and we will play this guy in 2024. You know, the longer you wait, maybe the offer gets worse, but maybe you get a better offer. And that's really kind of what I was getting at when I was telling people, like, I feel like they could have gotten a better offer for him. Not that they took the worst offer on the table.
I agree.
But simply that if they had played the game a little bit differently, they might have been able to come up with better value, but maybe not.
These trade negotiations are not just like, do you want this guy? Yes. Okay. Done. And we're, you know, like, there's a lot more nuance involved with that, obviously. And at the same time, I think my main frustration with it was coming from the fact that I don't think they needed to trade Legarius Sneed. Now, playing on the tag, if he told them I'm 100% going to sit out all next year, which, first of all, would have been a much worse decision for him than it even was for Chris Jones. Like, you know, Sneed hasn't made the money in his career to back up getting, you know, the franchise tag sit out fees and all that stuff. But the point is, I did think that the economics could have squeezed Snead in, but I guess it didn't. So, you know, we're moving on. Good luck to him in Tennessee. I hope that his knee holds up. That was a concern, was the medicals weren't maybe necessarily up to snuff with when he went and you know, did his exams for some of the other teams. So we'll just kind of see how it all plays out. But right now, given how this team has developed corners over the last couple of years, given their propensity to find diamonds in the rough and turn guys into LeJarius Sneed, you know, we'll trust them.
In other news, now the Chiefs freed up quite a bit of cap space, obviously, from that move, getting LeJarius Sneed off the books. And they put that cap space to great use, signing a star athlete to a three-year contract. Of course, the IPP rugby player, the superstar, Luis Ariz-Zamet. And this was a fascinating signing. I can't wait for... I know our buddy Dan Harms was starting to hit some of the rugby tape. I can't wait to ask him about him when we have him back on closer to the draft. But, man, this is a really fascinating signing for a number of reasons. Number one, the NFL just changed the kickoff rules, which also happened since the last time we recorded the podcast, in that they're just going to line up the blockers. That is not the returner, but the players are just going to line up, you know, 10 yards off. They're not going to get a running start and
5 yards.
Yeah. 5 yards. Sorry.
I'm pretty sure I've had it in my mind the 40 and the 35, but either way, very close to each other. It's not the 50 yards down the field and hit them like a car wreck. I mean, it's a lot safer.
Yeah, and it's also a lot more interesting just in terms of the way that you can scheme things up. Not that you couldn't do that with the old kickoff rules, but obviously that was trending into a dead fake play for years now. And now you have a completely new set of kick return rules that resemble, in many ways, rugby kick returns. Yeah. And just the way that those plays could be blocked up lends itself to a guy that has experience doing that sort of thing. Now, in addition to that, this guy ran a 4.4 at the International Combine. So he has been working in the International Pathway Program here for the last couple of months, training specifically for football, doing the drills, working out. And White Men Can't Jump is vertical, not impressive. But a 4.4 at his size.
6'3", 194.
I mean, pretty good. Not only that, but the GPS tracking data for this guy is insane. I get that when you're playing on a bigger pitch, which I believe rugby is a larger playing surface than a football field is. But he hit 24 miles per hour in a rugby match. And Tyreek Hill, now listen, Tyreek Hill is running in pads. You know, they don't wear pads in rugby, right? I don't know how much that slows you down. Certainly at least a little bit. And again, it's a different sport, you know, like it's a bigger playing surface, whatever. And you have a little bit more space to get up to full speed than you do on a football field. You know, Tyreek gets up to full speed, he's already in the end zone. But
yeah, sure.
24 right. miles per hour is faster than Tyreek Hill has ever run in an NFL game,
in pads for Tyreek, which is a right. big deal.
It is. But
he's motoring. I mean, people don't get up to 24 miles an hour unless they're extremely fast individuals. And even if you give Luis the pad tax and you drop that 24 down, he's still right up there with the fastest ball carriers in the NFL. I mean, it's not, you know, it doesn't subtract 10 miles an hour when you put the pads on. Like he still would be, I think he's going to look spry out there. And, you know, he's explosive, which is something that, you know, maybe you don't need a guy to be track speed, but definitely having that burst in a play like the kickoff where you can see a hole. And in these new kickoffs, there's not going to be levels to it. Typically there's not going to be like three levels that you're going to have to hit. You're going to have to see one hole. And if you can burst through it, you're going to look very similar to a rugby winger where you're just gone. Like there's no safeties in rugby, you know, like you can get past that and you're out of there. And it just, I think it's a perfect marriage of timing with the rules and with this kid being 22, just turned 23 in February and had the rugby world at his fingertips. Could have absolutely. Right. He had been playing professional rugby in Wales since he was 16. So he's been a you know, a seasoned veteran in the sport, but still.
And playing at the very, very highest
yes,
level.
Yes, he was a superstar.
Rugby.
This was not a guy that was trying it out and that kind of, you know, if you ask rugby fans, like he's one of their guys. He's one of the big guys in that sport. And it was a big deal to see him walk away. But his dad played American football over there in Wales, and he it's in his blood. It's in, you know, he said, I've been an NFL fan since I was a kid because of my dad. And this is a lifelong dream of mine. And I liked that he said, if not now for me, then when? Like he was like, right. If I'm going to make this happen, I can always go back to rugby if this doesn't work. Like I'm good there, you know, like he's set, but the salaries, he was making about $200,000 equivalent in as a superstar rugby player, which is fine amount of money, but that NFL minimum contract is closer to $1 million. I mean, it's a big jump in lifestyle, in competition, in proving himself. A lot of fun stories here if he sticks on, which a 3-year deal, and the IPP, the pathway program, gives you a free roster spot, not a
right.
You know, he's not going to take up a 53 man or a 16 man practice squad spot from someone. He's a free roster player, so like they want to encourage the international pathway. And I mean, I just think this is a slam dunk.
Yeah, just to give the listeners some perspective, back in December, the list of the 100 best rugby players in the world for 2023, Reece Amon ranked 74th. So I mean, like we're talking about one of the best 100 rugby players in the world, and not that it's necessarily a one for one. You just never know, obviously, how these athletes from other sports, how they're going to translate, whether they can play ball. But he certainly seems to have the physical tools, and it's not like there's no precedent for, you know, a guy coming over from rugby and playing in the NFL at a high level, because Jordan Mailata exists. And I get that Jordan Mailata is like, he's a 6'9", you know, 300 whatever pound human being.
Different build.
Different build, different kind of player. But like, at the same time, it's harder to play offensive line in the NFL than it is to play like running back, which is, you know, maybe what LRZ would be doing.
Reece Lightning
is probably what he would be doing, if not returning kicks. I mean, certainly would expect to see, you know, especially like those, you know, those deep handoffs, like give him a pitch, you know, like get him out in space, get him to the edge.
Yeah.
You know, like that's something that
absolutely
the Chiefs have
put him in space.
Have not had a guy be good at doing that. I mean, like those stretch plays to the outside, you know, give him like the Clyde outside zone runs. Like
imagine the athletic difference there.
He can't be worse at them than Clyde was.
No, and in fact, and he certainly will be a lot better than him. Just as a one-to-one comparison, the NFL top 174th player from last year was Garrett Wilson. So like,
well, you know,
if Garrett Wilson decided to go play rugby, that's not like we would all be saying like, who is that guy from as football fans? Like this is a guy. He's a good guy.
He's a dude. It's going to be a lot of fun. Really quickly, Bob Fesco did say the Chiefs are working on bringing back Mike Dana, something that has been kind of rumored, you know, as soon as they put up more cap space. It seems like that's something that probably will get done at some point. We'll keep an eye on that. Let's get to the elephant in the room. Let's address it.
Sure.
Rashee Rice on Saturday night was possibly involved in a multi-car crash in downtown Dallas, where he lives and spends the offseason. Two vehicles, a Lamborghini and a Corvette, seemingly both driven by either by Rashee Rice or people in his orbit. His friends, his crew, were allegedly racing in downtown Dallas, lost control of their vehicles. They crashed. There were four other vehicles involved in what ended up being sort of a, I don't even want to say a pileup situation, but a combination crash. Six total vehicles, but thankfully no serious injuries that have been reported. And so this is certainly something where I know you saw it on late Saturday night. I saw it very, very early Sunday morning as I was waking up to drive out to Sedalia, Missouri to go to Easter service with my grandma. This story has evolved a lot, and we'll kind of break it down and go through it, but just kind of your initial reaction to all of this.
Yeah. I mean, freaking Chiefs, man. And they're freaking lawyering and all the things that come with just being a high profile athlete and making mistakes. Like this is a mistake, regardless of the consequences, long term or short term. this is something that could have easily and should have easily been avoided. And that's my first thought is like, God damn it. Like, can these guys not just not screw up? Like their whole life is handed to them in these paychecks by the NFL. And all they have to do is not do stuff like this and they're fine. And, right. You know, like, I'm not trying to vilify Rashid too much here. I do not know the circumstances involved, but I do know that nothing that happens ever has to end in racing your fast cars down a busy highway at 6 p.m. I mean, it just doesn't, it doesn't look good. It doesn't look good for his decision-making. It doesn't look good for long-term contract prospects and everything that you would hope that a stud young wide receiver that was a top two or three NFL wide receiver rookie this year, like he disappointed me. That was my initial thought, is disappointment.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. I really do think that we'll get into the possible consequences here in a little bit. I mean, it's obviously the number one thing. It's extremely fortunate that
yes,
nobody was seriously hurt or killed.
Yeah, he'd be freaking Henry Ruggs if some. I mean,
yeah, so it's absolutely stupid behavior. There's no excuse for it. Now, all that being said, you know, at this point in time, he's retained counsel. We'll get to that in a second. It certainly seems like from the images that have been released that he was at the scene. Now, whether or not prosecutors can put him behind the wheel of one of those cars remains to be seen. I think there certainly are people on both sides of this camp already, and a lot of people armchair lawyering. I've got some of my mentions right now, and doing my damnedest to ignore them while we're recording the podcast. But listen, a lot of very silly, clownish takes out there. For those of you who may be tuning in to this podcast for the first time, I've been a prosecutor for 10 years. I've prosecuted traffic cases before. So I have a little bit of perspective on this. And I think, you know, at this point, we don't know. The fact that he left the scene obviously could expose him to some charges for leaving the scene. Leaving the scene in itself is a pretty serious crime. Yeah. The reason it's a serious crime is because people usually, not always, but usually when people leave the scene, it's because they feel like they've done very serious harm to somebody. And they're worried about, you know, going to jail, or they're drunk, or they have drugs in their car, or whatever. I'm not saying that's what happened. I'm saying oftentimes when people leave the scene deliberately, that's kind of what's going on. That's the thought process.
Bigger thoughts of,
yeah, if I leave, it will be better for me than if I stay. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that's what happened here, but that's why leaving the scene of an accident is a serious crime. Now, mm-hmm. That being said, how serious is it, right? Like, how... What are we talking here? Big picture, consequences, potential consequences. He's retained counsel. He released a statement, and it's just you're bang on generic. It's not a Chiefsaholic, wild, crazy. Oh, he's innocent, and
I the saw walls somebody,
are closing in. And
yes,
I mean,
I saw somebody say his buddy went out of bounds in the car, and he tried to catch him. I mean, you know, just do the sure. The lawyering that guy good. Did. But yeah,
The thing is. There's obviously, there's a lot of ways that this could potentially play out, but in Texas, leaving the scene of an accident without serious injury or death is going to be a low level felony. And people have been throwing around the potential penalties for this. The maximum possible penalty for leaving the scene of an accident without serious bodily injury or death, which is where it kind of looks like we're at right now. Serious bodily injury, like in Colorado, for instance, I haven't looked it up, in Texas, includes like any break or fracture. So like if you like broke a finger, yeah, that's sure. Not something that the police would consider to be a serious injury. It's not life-threatening, but yeah. It could technically be, legally, it could be considered serious bodily injury.
I'd be pissed so, if I broke a finger.
I mean, we're not completely out of the woods yet, but even if we have serious, obviously no one's died. So
yeah.
Even if we had serious bodily injury somehow, you know, you're looking at a low-level felony. It's not really that different, completely different situations, but really I think it's maybe helpful to look at Frank Clark, weirdly enough. And like Frank Clark got charged with two low-level felonies for having the Uzis in his car, another stupid, fairly senseless thing to be doing, and to be caught doing it twice in the span of, you know, a couple of months.
He likes his Uzis, he was man.
Sure. And you know, to be honest, it's probably more justifiable to have an Uzi in your car when you're a rich, famous athlete yeah. than it is to be driving your car down a busy highway in Dallas.
Yeah, you're
right. Rent a racetrack, bro. Yep. Like, you know, I don't know how much that costs, but you're good for it. And Now then, of course, you'd have to tell the team, and like Brett Veach
well,
probably was putting the kibosh on that.
It's the
sure.
thrill of the
I
other
know.
People.
I get it. But I think the Frank Clark situation is actually maybe a little bit instructive here, because
yeah.
people see felony and they freak out, and they think,
yeah.
you know, then they look at, they see potential prison time and they freak out. Spoiler alert, every felony carries the possibility of potential prison time, right? It's just
yeah,
a question
why wouldn't
of,
it?
It's just a question of how much. You know, if you're looking at a misdemeanor, you're looking at jail, you're looking at a felony, you're looking at prison. So that doesn't mean, number one, it doesn't mean that he's going to be charged with felony. First, they have to prove that he was driving. Can they do that? Maybe. Can they prove that he intentionally left the scene, right? Like, it's probably at this point, you know, if he was the one, if he's the one in the pictures,
that.
It certainly
yeah.
looks like he was there. And obviously he left before the police got there. It also seems to me from the reading of the Texas statute that leaving the scene there is a strict liability offense, which basically like doesn't give you the option to say, well, I didn't know that I caused a crash, or like, you know, I didn't
yeah.
know somebody was hurt or whatever.
Sure. That makes sense.
But in any case, they have to be able to prove it all first. You know, what they start at charging wise is not how the case is ultimately going to end up. It can always, it's always a little bit, and I feel like, deja vu a little bit, because I remember doing this with Frank Clark a couple of years ago. But just because somebody's charged with felony doesn't mean that they're going to plead to it. And even if they do get, you know, a low-level felony charge, that doesn't necessarily mean very much in terms of potential league discipline. Let's leave the potential league discipline for the end. But the charge can always be pled down. He's obviously going to have the best legal representation that anybody can buy. Again, this goes back to, you know, don't engage in the behavior in the first place, and then you're not out, you know, $100,000 for a lawyer or whatever, you know, he's going to end up paying for that. It's an expensive mistake, so
yeah.
don't do it.
Yeah.
But all that to say that, like, especially with something like this, where is it stupid behavior? Is it reckless behavior? Yes. Did he intentionally kill a guy? Did he kill a guy at all? You know, did he seriously hurt somebody? You know, like, was there intentionality behind it? All these things are factors that are mitigating in his case, where, you know, he didn't do this. You know, this is reckless conduct. It's not intentional conduct. There's almost no chance that they would be able to prove any kind of impairment at this stage, you know, because, again, he left the scene. Alcohol metabolizes in your blood extremely quickly. You know, it's in and out of your system and 6 to 12 hours tops.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even if you're hammered drunk, mm-hmm. it's probably not going to stay in there that long. You know, he successfully evaded police. Let's just call it what it is.
Right.
Long enough that if he was impaired and he was driving, they're not going to be able to prove it. Now, even if, you know, I mean, I see people posting photos, you know, he was at a restaurant drinking earlier that day. Even if that's true, that doesn't prove that he was impaired at the time of the crash. And that's what you have to be able to prove to convict somebody of a DUI or something like that. So he's out of the woods there. I'd be stunned if any of that presented any kind of serious problem at all. So in terms of potential league discipline, going back to Frank Clark, I mean, Frank got, what, 2 games? I think
I was trying to remember if Frank even got dinged for that.
Yeah,
I remember.
I think
I'll put up what you keep going.
Yeah, but all that to say that, like, I mean, you can quibble about what's more serious from
two
a
games.
Moral standpoint. 2 games, sure.
Nailed it.
So what's more serious from a moral standpoint? You know, like, obviously, Frank, unless he shoots somebody with an Uzi, like, carrying around an Uzi doesn't in itself present great risk to society. I guess it could just go off, you know, whatever, guns.
Sure.
You know,
sure.
They're dangerous.
Yeah.
But certainly it doesn't present the same risk to other people as driving down the highway at 150 miles an hour or whatever during rush hour in Dallas.
Yeah, it's kind of the difference between owning a fast car and racing with that fast car.
Right.
You know,
right.
having
yeah,
the
sure.
Uzis versus shooting the Uzis, two
right.
very different acts.
Right, exactly. But in terms of the level of felony that they are, they're pretty similar. They're like in the
yeah.
same ballpark. Now you
yeah.
do have two different jurisdictions, California versus Texas, you know, a different reputation in terms of how those
yeah,
states
of course.
Can't handle crime.
Yeah.
But there's also something to be said for that, you know, it happened in Dallas, which like Dallas compared to rural Texas,
mm-hmm.
you know, if he did this in
El Paso,
you know, the middle of nowhere, rural Texas, sure,
yeah.
he might go to prison.
Yeah,
right?
He might die. Yeah.
Yeah. He might
yeah.
get the death penalty. Right.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
he did it in a major city, a cosmopolitan city, Dallas. you just can never really predict how prosecutors are going to react to prosecuting a celebrity.
True.
This type of case, and this is sort of an interesting little wrinkle in it too. This type of case is the type of case that typically would be handled by an extremely low-level prosecutor, like one of the newest prosecutors in the office. You know, those are the ones that have handled traffic and misdemeanors. And, you know, even a low-level felony in traffic is probably going to be handled by a relatively inexperienced prosecutor. Because it's a celebrity, that probably won't be the case. They'll probably have somebody on it that, you know, a supervisor will probably handle the case. That person's not probably extremely well-versed in prosecuting a traffic offense because they're on as a supervisor to bigger and better things, murders, you know,
Yeah,
sexual
sure.
assaults and
Yeah, the
all
good
kinds of
stuff.
exciting things like that. You know, the real cases that people care about and that really matter. So it's just really hard to predict how exactly this will play out. But I think at the end of the day, I will go on record with my official prediction. I think he will get suspended. I think he will get less than 4 games. I'd say 1 to 4 games. And I think ultimately we will look back on this and be thankful that it was worse.
Yeah, I sure hope that's the case. We definitely are already thankful that it wasn't worse. And you know, if the first couple games of the season are a struggle on offense, then hopefully he learns a lesson there that his actions matter and they have consequences. And you know, that's something that bridge we'll have to cross when we get there. But yeah, it was an unfortunate situation. We'll hope that nothing further comes of it, and we'll hope that he keeps his nose clean from here on out. He can't have shit like this going on if he expects to stick long term in the NFL. That's just, you're gonna screw around and get caught one of these times.
Yeah, it's always good to have, you know, to fuck around and find out, but without finding out, right? Like
Yeah,
we talk about
sure.
this in a humorous context with the team all the time, but like
Yes,
to be in
I
a
was thinking that,
situation
yeah.
where you make an egregious mistake, but you and everyone else is able to walk away from it, that usually, unless you're a real big time knucklehead, usually has a pretty powerful effect on future behavior. And let's hope that it does in Rasheed's case as well. Before we turn to the next great American dynasty, just really quick on the Carson Wentz situation, because this is interesting. The Chiefs, Trey Wingo reports the Chiefs actually wanted to sign Wentz last season
Yep, I
as
remember that.
Mahomes' backup, but Wentz still saw himself as a starter. Interesting. So
And now he doesn't.
the Chiefs are ending their years-long pursuit, Carson Wentz, with a 1 year backup contract for him.
Yeah, I think it's funny that he was like, "Nah, dude, I could totally be a starter." And then he backs up Matt Stafford for 1 year in LA. Now he's like, "All
He's
right.
like,
I guess that was it. Guess I can't do it no more."
yeah, maybe not. This guy's got it more than I got it. Yeah, it's going to be an interesting situation. We'll see. Obviously, we'll update the backup quarterback battle if it ends up being a battle going forward. But now we have to turn to the next great American dynasty. As I mentioned, the first game of the 2019 playoffs. Boy, this was an interesting regular season. Mahomes obviously blowing out his knee in Denver, coming back after missing just 2 games. And leading the Chiefs to another division title and another playoff bye. But here we are, the first round of the playoffs. The Chiefs are hosting the Houston Texans at Arrowhead. And I can't think of a better way to break down this game than the Chiefs system. So I will turn it over to you.
So we didn't have the Chiefs system in place. In fact, we didn't have the podcast in place yet for this game, for recapping this game. This is one of the last games that we didn't have a live podcast for. And boy, is if this isn't the most typical Chiefs game, this is probably where the system was born, was from this exact game. For those of you that don't know, this is the system that the Chiefs employ when they win football games. Sometimes it's a little, maybe a bit of a stretch, not mostly, but this time it's bang on. So we'll go through it. Of course, it's an acronym: create drama, handle adversity, inspire hope, engage physically, finish strong, and separate entirely. And that means we start with the C, which is create drama. Now, boy, the playoffs, they're kind of a free space for the C. They're
Sure,
so
definitely.
dramatic by nature. Sometimes, though, even through the drama of the playoffs, a classic C category happens in the beginning of the playoff game. And I mean, again, nothing more typifies the Chiefs system and the create drama than the 24 to nothing hole that the Chiefs dug in this one. A quick recap of that hole for those of you who blocked out this section of the game from your memories. I understand entirely if you did so, but just to take us back in time, after the Chiefs had lost their previous playoff game to the Patriots at home in dramatic fashion, the Texans start this game out, get the ball first. They hit a 3rd-and-1 pass on their own 46 to a completely wide ass open Kenny Stills for 54 yards on an opening touchdown. That was just like, oof, just a gut punch right to start it off. The Chiefs then come out, and after the first play, a short little run, they have a false start, and then they burn a timeout before the ensuing 3rd-and-6 when they couldn't get the play clock handled correctly. And then Travis Kelce dropped a 3rd-down pass. So they come out and shoot themselves literally like constantly in the foot on the first drive. Then their punt to just turn everything sideways was blocked and returned by Chiefs legend Lonnie Johnson. He, of course, spent from May to August 2023 on the Chiefs before they released him. But Lonnie Johnson returns it for a touchdown and a 14-0 Houston lead right out of the gate. So everybody's kind of thunderstruck a little bit. The Chiefs then come out. They have a 3rd-and-5 pass right in the breadbasket of DeMarcus Robinson, who just lets it hit the turf. He's running a crosser. Mahomes hits him perfectly. Doesn't matter. They forced a 4th-and-17 after a Frank Clark sack after they punted from that D-Rob drop. But on 4th-and-17, Tyreek Hill muffed the punt. He was back there to return the punt to get the crowd going, because Tyreek didn't really return punts very much those days. But it was the playoffs, and they wanted to put him back out there and just to see what happened. And he drops at the 6-yard line. The Texans jump on it. 2 plays later, it is 21-0 visitors. And just to keep piling on after 2 really bad incompletions that neither guy was on the right page with Damien Williams, and again with DeMarcus Robinson on 3rd-down, Mahomes tries a hole shot deep for Tyreek Hill, who not only it hits him, but not only does he not hold on to it, he gets absolutely lit up by actual Chiefs legend Justin Reid to force an incompletion. So they just, things weren't working in these first couple drives. By the time the Texans march all the way down the field on their ensuing drive, on 4th-and-1 from the Chiefs' 13-yard line, holding a 21-0 second quarter lead, there was 11 minutes to go in the half, and we all kind of expected the Texans to just, you know, they had been doing everything they wanted on all sides of the ball to go pick up that 4th-down, ram a 28-0 lead down our throats and run away with the game. But instead, unfortunately, Bill O'Brien decided to settle for a field goal at that point, a short field goal to go up 24-0. You and I, who were in attendance at this game, looked at each other and we said, we came to an agreement that if the Chiefs do not score on their next drive down 24-0, we weren't sure we could stick it out. It was rough. We were having basically the worst time any human being can have at a sports game. It was really, really dramatic and terrible. And the Chiefs were down 24-0.
Yeah, it was awful. I really like, I'll understand it if we get judgment from the listeners on, on this stance that we had of potentially leaving a playoff game. However, first of all, we didn't, but second of all, I mean, like, let's spin back and hit on a couple of things that you pointed out here. Number one, you know, the Chiefs won a playoff game the previous year at home. They hosted their first AFC championship game ever at Arrowhead, right? And those were huge accomplishments. And Mahomes won the MVP, and obviously there was a ton of promise for this season. However, the Chiefs did lose in the AFC championship game to the Patriots. And then after getting a bye again for the 2nd year in a row, they came out completely flat and they were getting absolutely walloped 24-0 by the Texans at home. They looked flat. They looked bad. They were doing all kinds of stupid stuff on defense. They were doing stupid stuff on offense. They were doing really stupid stuff on special teams. So, I mean, like, this game, this was the first playoff game since I had moved to Colorado. So I actually flew in for this game.
You did.
And I flew in that morning and I was going to fly out that night. And it was literally like, well, you know, like, we could go, I don't know, shoot pool at, you know, like head down to, you know, the fine establishments near Arrowhead. And, you know, like, we could go play miniature golf at Coolcrest, right? Like, whatever, you know, like, whatever, Like literally anything would have been a better use of our time had the Chiefs not been able to turn this around. But I really do think, like, I mean, what I remember most about this was just the, we thought after the Colts game, and then even really after the Patriots game, even though the that Chiefs lost that game, that things were different.
I agree.
And that the bad Chiefs were gone forever, even mm-hmm. though we didn't win the Super Bowl. We didn't get over the hump, but it's just like, yo, this Chiefs
things
team
felt
is different.
Yeah.
And this felt exactly like yeah. every Chiefs playoff loss of our entire lifetimes.
It did.
And it felt uniquely soul crushing because, you know, Mahomes, you know, we were in attendance in Denver for Thursday Night Football when he tore up his knee. And
that
you
year,
know,
yeah.
it felt like that was the season. The Chiefs, you know, miraculously, he's able to come back after missing just two games. The Chiefs are still able to get a playoff bye. They're still able to win the division. You know, they're still able to host a playoff game. And let's be honest, this Texas team was not that good. You know, like, this was a team that finished in the 20s at DVOA. They weren't a very good team. They were coached by Bill O'Brien. They were quarterbacked by Deshaun Watson, who was a good player, had a good year. But, like,
yeah.
You know, he's not Patrick Mahomes. This is a game that the Chiefs should have won. And then for them to come out and just lay a complete egg, the vibes in the stadium were very bad. They were very bad.
There were the worst vibes I've experienced at Arrowhead, personally. And I've been to a lot of games. And I mean,
and a lot of bad games with bad vibes.
We were at the Tennessee loss. Like, that was the playoff loss. That was a horrible, horrible
21-3 lead at half.
Exactly. Yep. And, you know, so what you and I, what I remember us talking about as we were raging about what was going on was how all of these Chiefs playoff losses are so unique and so similar. Like, right. for example, I mean, we don't have to get in too much into it, but the couple Colts losses with both the no punt game against against Peyton Manning, and then the wild card game against Andrew Luck, those were wildly different game scripts, but both horrifying, heartbreaking losses to the Colts. And then, of course, the Lynn Elliott game. And of course, the Steelers game with the two touchdowns to none. And I mean, literally just go on and on and on about, you know, Dee Ford being offsides and all these things that had happened to the Chiefs over their mostly home playoff house of horrors. And then now, you know, to get blown out by the Texans in a year after the MVP season and all that stuff, it was a gut punch. However, of course, that was only the C. That was only the drama that was then created. The Chiefs said, don't worry, Taylor. Don't worry, Austin. We've got the Chiefs system. We've got handle adversity, the H. The field goal, and I put stop in quotes in my notes, the field goal stop was followed immediately by the first good thing that had ever happened to any of us in our entire lives, which was a Mecole Hardman kick return for 58 yards, set up the Chiefs to begin their climb out of the abyss and back into this game. There was a quick little 25-yard pass interference to Travis Kelce that got our curiosity, and then a Damian Williams 17-yard touchdown pass placed perfectly on his right hip that got our attention. We went from literally when that first touchdown was scored, where you and I said, if they don't score here, we're freaking out of here. We're looking around at each other like, okay, like it's 24-7. But we all knew that as long as this Chiefs team was firing bullets, that they had a shot. That the handling of the adversity there was to not let the mountain just erode on you completely and fall on top of you. And they went out, and even though they were facing this giant hole, they got the little defensive momentum play, they got the special teams momentum play, and then they got the offensive momentum. And next thing you knew, you know, the Chiefs were not quite out of this thing.
Yeah, this was like an all-time like vibes momentum game at Arrowhead, because like as I said, the vibes were at like an all-time low. It's one thing to you know, lose a playoff game where you're up 21-3 at the half, or where you're up whatever we were against 28-3 at the half against the Colts.
35-10, I think, was the biggest that got 25-point lead. Yeah.
You know, it's one thing to lose a playoff game like that, but, you know, none of those teams were necessarily serious Super Bowl contenders. You know, like you could squint and be like, well, you know, if like 15 things break our way in the playoffs, you know, like maybe we can get there. And then if you get there, you know, anybody can do it if you get there. This team was different because we had the quarterback and we had the home playoff game and we had just seen the AFC Championship game, you know, the year before. I mean, you had to get there, and to do it, you had to beat a bad team. And I think that all played into how quickly the crowd turned around in this game. I think I would say the vibe shift just based on this one score to make it 24-7 was immense. And I think
I agree with
you
you.
have to give credit to Chiefs fans for knowing ball a little bit because, you know, like, and we saw this obviously the first Super Bowl run. That's when we realized that you get all these fun, iconic NFL films, productions, and things. Like when you win the Super Bowl, you get all this additional
Oh, it's
content
glorious.
generated about you. But, you know, I mean, even just the mic'd up that was coming out like that evening of Mahomes on the sideline and saying, you know, like, we're beating ourselves.
Dude,
We just
yeah.
need to be ourselves. Let's do something special. You know, they're already counting us out, et cetera. I would say that very nicely captured the vibe in the stadium, which was, you know, these guys haven't really done anything to be beating us this badly. We're doing all of this to ourselves. And the touchdown was just like, all right, we can score. We
So let's
can
do
play
it.
football. Like, here, this is what it looks like. This is what it looks like to move the ball and not drop it and have success and put it in the end zone. And as long as we continue to do that, we at least have a chance to win this game. I will give so much credit to the, you know, thousands of mentally scarred and damaged Chiefs fans at the game that didn't leave the game when it was 24 to nothing. And we
Like
were
us.
real close. We were real close, not to pat ourselves on the back too hard, but like, everybody was expecting this. Like, as soon as we scored the touchdown, it felt like a huge sea change in the stadium. The vibes were like not completely restored, but like, oh boy, that was very much adversity handled.
Yes, it was. Real quick to defend the position of A, leaving a game in person, B,
Sure.
turning off a game, or C, thinking that your team is going to lose a game and
Yeah.
tweeting or saying something about, like, look, these types of actions and statements can come from the most diehard fans there are. And
Sure.
it doesn't mean anything about your fandom if you're so wrapped up emotionally in the in what's going on in the game that you decide it is better for your own mental health and sanity to step away and to not engage with this team at this time. And it you know, even saying there's no way we're going to win this game and then they win this game, like people just need to calm down
Yeah.
about this fandom holier than thou. I always believe no matter what, even if we're down 100-0 with 1 second to go, I think we're still going to be able to win. Like, no, everyone has their limits on logically what they think is going to happen in a sports game. And it doesn't mean they love their team any less. And it doesn't mean if they leave early that they didn't believe or anything. You just sometimes have to walk away. I had to say that because we have found ourselves several times in situations like that. And I love this team more than everybody I know. And it means nothing to me that I have to walk away sometimes. So,
Sure.
you know,
Right.
anyways,
We
the
care too much.
adversity, yeah, we care too much. That's our fatal flaw. Adversity was handled. And so what followed next was the most hope-inspiring 10 minutes in the history of human competition. A fourth down fake punt attempt on a direct snap to our guy, Justin Reed, was sniffed out by questionably Chiefs legend Dan Sorensen.
Sure.
You know, he's legendary, certainly. For another just a shot in the arm, a life boosting play that the Texans didn't need to give the Chiefs. The Texans certainly could have punted that ball away and made the Chiefs drive the whole length of the field. They did not, and the Chiefs immediately came out and they knew that Lonnie Johnson was so overmatched by Travis Kelce. They threw a ball to Travis Kelce immediately and got a 28-yard DPI that if Lonnie Johnson doesn't pass interfere him, I mean, Kelce's probably taking it to the house. Like
Right.
he just toasted him. It was classic. And that put the ball after the fourth down stop and a 28-yard DPI right down to the 5-yard line. So the Chiefs are already down, even though they're down 24-7, they're knocking on the door. And then the very next play, Mahomes finds Kelce again to cut the once insurmountable 24-point lead all the way down to 10. In a blink of an eye, it is 24-14. And even though the next entries in the Chiefs series could all be the Inspire Hope headline. You know, the Inspire Hope, this is a very inspirational game in general. And and we could have detailed all the rest of these plays under I. We'll let the game breathe a bit, and I'll break I here. Our emotions sitting in our seats at Arrowhead. As you mentioned, we're at an all-time roller coaster of both high and low. This was, people were yelling stuff in their seats, but not like the way that when you're normally mad at a game, everyone kind of grumbles and kind of yells, right, and kind of stuff. But people were like, this team sucks. Like yeah, literally just losing their minds. And the sad part was nobody around them was being like, nah, dude, don't worry. Like everyone was right in this just horrifying moment. And then after this touchdown to cut the lead, I mean, I felt like we were up two touchdowns after right that second touchdown. Right. I felt, you know, we were so elated, and the weight was so lifted off our shoulders that, first of all, it's a game again, regardless of the outcome of the game. Like, now the Chiefs are down 10. Now we can cook. Now it's absolutely all systems go. But more than that, you could sense the crowd just kind of feeding off of this and turning into this frenzy that I've never been a part of. We had some magical Royals runs in person that were pretty close, where like the Royals would start doing some stuff in 14 and 15 where it was like, oh, the other team is so screwed. Even if they're up three in the eighth inning, the other team, like, you still are like, ah, devil magic. Absolutely. But this is what this was. This was the closest to Chiefs devil magic that I've ever seen. And I mean, I'm getting chills right now just recapping that moment. It was amazing.
It was amazing. And, you know, I mean, we obviously have to give all the credit to Patrick Mahomes, because
we do, as always.
If anyone else was the quarterback, we wouldn't have felt like it was possible. But because he was the quarterback, it was not only felt possible, but it felt inevitable.
Yeah.
And at the same time, I think, like, it is important to point out that, like, you know, I mean, a couple years before this, we saw the Patriots come back from 28-3 in the Super Bowl, regrettably. And, you know, the Chiefs, a couple years before that, gave up, you know, a 25-point lead in the playoffs to Andrew Luck. So it's not like what we were watching, it wasn't unprecedented. It wasn't something that had never happened before. Now,
if I may, the greatest comeback in NFL history up until this point in this game was a playoff game, was a 35 to nothing deficit, or 32 to nothing. So, I mean, this, you're absolutely right. My backup
quarterback, by the way. So
that's right. So the precedent was certainly set.
Now, of course, as we will discuss, the way that it happened was unprecedented, and will probably never be seen again in terms of how quickly the reversal happened. But yeah, I mean, this was, again, just an all-time 180 vibe shift stadium-wide. And, you know, it's, again, it's credit to Chiefs fans that I know, obviously, there was that one guy who, you know, proclaimed himself as the Jinx, and he left the
good
game.
Good luck, Chuck.
Chiefs to me. Good luck, Chuck. Good luck, Chuck, notwithstanding. Everybody was there. Everybody got loud. As soon as the team gave us a reason to cheer for something, the stadium was Arrowhead again.
Sure, absolutely. So after the I comes E, engaging physically, I'll bring up our guy again, Dirty Dan, with a pop on the ensuing kickoff after that Kelce touchdown against DeAndre Carter that put the ball fluttering magically into the waiting arms of Chiefs running back Darwin Thompson on the kick coverage team, who certainly could have scored if he knew that he could advance a fumble on the kick return for a touchdown, which he did not know. So he caught it, kind of looked around to celebrate, and noticed everyone was still running full speed, and was like, oh, okay. And he scooted a little bit more and got down to the six. But then after a couple shots at the end zone on third and six, Mahomes, once again, he was scrambling to his right, finds Travis Kelce for the second touchdown in a row. And even though it was 24-21 Texans, it basically was game over Chiefs. I mean, it was as pandemonium. That touchdown there was just this, like, I can't believe that. I think Romo said on the broadcast, I've never seen so many big plays by both teams all in a row in a game like this, where it was just not punch counter punch. It was like knockout, get up, knock the other guy out, get up, knock the other guy out. Like, I mean, they were just, the Texans were doing everything right for 24 points, and then the Chiefs just came back, and every single play on both sides of the ball and special teams were going the Chiefs' way. I've never seen the momentum of a game shift like this, and as you said, probably never will again, just the way that the Texans jumped out to the lead, and then this torrent of points that the Chiefs came back with, it's as Mahomes has ever been. It was magic.
Yeah, I mean, I love the way that you have orchestrated this, choreographed this, so that, you know, each letter, it just sort of builds and builds and builds to the exciting conclusion, because this is exactly how the game felt. It literally was, you know, it's like, all right, well, there's the first touchdown. There's the second touchdown. Oh, there's the third touchdown. Let's just see, like, I mean, we know what's, we know what's going to happen.
We can go.
Let's see how far we can go, you know, just see how weird we can get with it. And yeah. Boy, did we get weird with it.
Yes. So F finished strong. Now you'll note in the time in the game, there's a couple minutes left in the first half. This is the first time in the history of the Chiefs system that the F actually stands for finish the first half strong, because that's what the Chiefs did here to essentially ice the game. There was the Texans, after the Chiefs scored to cut it to three, marched kind of halfway down the field-ish and had a third and 12 to DeAndre Hopkins over the middle that Honey Badger, Tyrann Mathieu, just destroyed, just broke up beautifully. Really, really nice play by him in a big momentum spot that, you know, if Hopkins comes up with that ball, who knows what's going to happen. But instead, you could just sense that the Chiefs weren't done cooking, because there were a couple minutes left in this half. And after the way things had gone, you know, get ready, buckle up. And the first three plays of the ensuing drive after the Texans punted were another 15-yard DPI on Lonnie. He would have been the good one against Kelce, followed by a 20-yard pass to Tyreek Hill, where he just looked faster than everybody, did his normal Tyreek Hill kind of jitterbug stuff around and took off. And then the third play of the drive was just a absolute, at this point in our lives right now, vintage 21-yard back-breaking sideline run by Mahomes, where he drops back, the defense drops back because he'd been dicing him up over the air, and they just, people just forget about his legs. They just don't account for it like they should. They still don't to this day, despite him proving in moments like this that he's every bit capable of ripping off a 21-yarder. And no team had ever been more cooked at that point than the Houston Texans. They were up 24-21, but as soon as Mahomes scooted out of bounds, close to the goal line, arms up, flexing, just you could tell he was just like, these guys are done. And then not long after that, a couple plays later on third down, he's toe-drag swagging his way to a third touchdown pass to Travis Kelce in the quarter, the fourth touchdown pass for Mahomes in the quarter, and the first time in NFL history that a team had been down 24 and then led by halftime. That of all the weird and crazy and unbelievable Mahomes stats and Chiefs Mahomes era stats that we're ever going to come up with in our whole lives, I just don't know how many are going to rank above down 24 to 28-24 in one half. It was breathtaking. It was the only other time it's probably ever going to be able to happen in NFL history is if once again Patrick Mahomes finds himself down 24 in the first quarter. He's the only guy you could ever see being able to pull off something that just neck-breaking, unbelievable. We were this was like delirium. This was like out of body fourth touchdown, where like I just remember jumping up and down and being like, what is happening in my life right now? Like, why, where are we? It was something else.
Yeah, it was pandemonium. I mean, it's crazy. Like, all the milestones for this game. I mean, the Texans, believe it or not, first team in NFL history to hit 0% win expectancy while having a lead in the game. I mean, literally, if you pulled it up on ESPN, like I'm looking at it right now. It's right here in front of me on the divisional round. I just see the win probability 0% in the first half with the lead.
Yeah.
It was cooked. Great. I mean, it was crazy. A team has never been more cooked. And, you know, obviously it's easy to say this in hindsight, but like it felt like the team would never lose again. And
also that.
Yeah. I mean, like it felt like the Super Bowl was inevitable. And there were a lot of moments of doubt, which we'll talk about the next couple of weeks, between this touchdown and the end of the game, you know, Damian Williams running to immortality at the end of the Super Bowl live.
Yeah.
But I mean, this was one of those moments that, and there are so many moments like this in NFL history that you read about that other teams have experienced and that we never really had,
Hell
right?
yeah.
Like you read about, you think about all these legendary playoff runs, and you mentioned it, not that it ended with the Super Bowl, but like obviously the Bills come back, you know, en route to, I think, the second of their four, second or third of their four Super Bowl losses, you know, like an iconic game. You know, the Colts didn't win the Super Bowl, but like a lot of people remember their comeback against us, unfortunately. And
Sure.
just to have one of those iconic NFL moments in, you know, a couple years at this point after 28-3, you know, you just lost to Tom Brady last year. Tom Brady was in the midst of, in fact, I think at this point he had already been eliminated, right? Maybe the night or the weekend before, because they got eliminated in the first round.
Yeah, they got beat by the Titans
Right.
at home in the wild
On
card round.
wild card weekend,
That's
right?
right.
So, you know, it really felt like, in a lot of ways, like, all right, you beat us last year, you won the Super Bowl, congratulations. The
It's
run
our
is
time.
over. This is
Yep.
it. This
Yep.
is,
Time's ours.
we're the team that's going to be coming back from, you know, down 24 points in playoff game. We're the one that's, except we're going to do it better than you. You know, I mean, it took the Patriots the entire game to tie it, to send it to overtime. And it took us the first half to have the lead. So it just, it's hard to describe even now. And obviously at the time there were no words, just noises and sensations. It was something else.
It was. We became the ones who knocked. That's basically what happened. And then S separate entirely. In this case, the S also stands for second half because this game was a party at halftime. I mean, this was one of the most electric halftimes that I remember as a Chiefs fan. Just like everyone's still think buzzing about that second quarter and with the Chiefs with the lead and just this whole atmosphere that we knew the Chiefs were getting the ball to come out in the start of the second half. Like we were talking about, you and I were talking about, like, well, we're going to be up 10 and then we're going to be, I mean, you know, just like just seeing the writing on the wall. And of course that includes separating entirely, and that's what they did. Nobody could believe what. But at the same time, we all could believe it. We had all been watching Patrick Mahomes. We had all seen some crazy stuff that they had pulled off, whether that's the Ravens 4th and 9 or just all the different, you know, kind of wild moments, but nothing like this yet. The Chiefs never faced a third down on their opening drive of the second half. They went 7 plays, 75 yards, just ding, 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 like that. Got down to the 1 yard line. Damien Williams, 1 yard, just an afterthought touchdown because at this point, even though it was 34-24, it was 3400-24. I mean, the game was over. The Chiefs were not done scoring. They scored touchdowns on their next two drives to finish the day off with a Butker field goal to make it 51 points in an absolute mind blower of a game where the Chiefs scored touchdowns on 7 consecutive drives. Consecutive drives. Without so much as a field goal or a punt or a turnover or anything, they started cooking and they cooked up the greatest meal that any Chiefs fan had ever eaten. It was I still, you know, we were talking about recapping in this new segment we're doing, and like some of these playoff games, like I loved every playoff win, but some of them just stand out a little bit more than others. And like, I'll remember every moment from this game for the rest of my life in a way that I don't know if I'll remember every moment from like Super Bowl 57 for the rest of my life. Like you like this cacophony of noise and points and emotions is it's like a traumatic experience. Like it's burned in to my brain in a way that just watching even a regular Super Bowl, which is crazy to say, but you know, we've been to 4 of them, so I can say that now. But like those are stressful and important and dramatic and all that stuff. But there's just nothing like thinking you're dead and coming back to life and killing the other person so thoroughly that they collapsed and Deshaun Watson became this horrible shell of himself and the Texans traded everybody away. I mean, we killed this version of the Texans,
Yes, we
this
did.
dynamic offense with, you know, I mean, they had between Will Fuller and Kenny Stills and DeAndre Hopkins. I mean, all those guys could ball, and they just, the moment we did this to them, Bill O'Brien was gone, their front office was gone, their players were gone. They just all had to get out of there because they just, none of them could live with themselves that they let the Chiefs do this to them. And we were there for it.
Yeah, we were. And it was amazing. And it's crazy. I mean, the seventh straight touchdowns, obviously just an absurd stat.
Absurd.
This game, I remember having, so I had a conversation with some people, some folks, some listeners on Twitter after the Super Bowl. You know, one of those, you know, quote this Twitter prompts asking what the most impressive game of the Mahomes era was. And this got a lot of votes for people. I don't think it's the most impressive game in the Mahomes era because the Chiefs were supposed to blow out the Texans and they did blow out the Texans. It happened in a weird way, but the result was expected. Like, this was what was supposed to happen. The game was supposed to be fairly non-competitive. The Chiefs were the better team and they won the game going away. But this is like, I mean, I'm not even sure which other game in the Mahomes era, regular or postseason, would be in contention with this game for the craziest game.
The Rams this game is probably the only other one I could possibly think
sure,
of.
Sure, yeah.
But I mean, 51. You know, the way that this game unfolded, like, impressive doesn't really do it because the Chiefs dug their own hole.
Right, exactly.
This was not exactly right. The Texans exactly right. Coming out there and being overwhelming and the Chiefs right. Clawing their way back. As we said in the recap, like, the Chiefs were the reason the Chiefs were down 24 right. to nothing. And exactly. So, yeah, I guess if you want to spot another person, you know, a bunch of points and then come back and win, like, yeah, that's cool. But it's more crazy. It's more just like this like natural disaster that happened to the Texans that was the Chiefs, that it was just this kind of, you know, a force of nature. And I definitely do not share the opinion that this is the most impressive win in the Mahomes era, but boy, I'm not sure I'm going to remember many of them more vividly than this one.
Sure. Incredibly memorable. An amazing game. It feels, and this, you know, this is the first game of our journey to the first Super Bowl. So
that's right.
It's in hindsight, it takes on all the more importance. Obviously, it felt hugely consequential at the time because of the way that it happened. And obviously, it's taken on so much special significance for us as Chiefs fans because of what happened after this game. And we'll talk about that the next couple of weeks. But before we do that, let's get to our awards. As you said, this was one of the last games that we did not have a live recap. And we got to the Chiefs system somewhat late, relatively speaking, in our podcast.
Yeah, a couple of years.
The awards were a staple almost from the very beginning. But this is one of the games where we didn't have awards. So we have our five-star men. Five-star man! Who, through their play on the field, scream out, "I'm a five-star man." We have our trash men.
I'm the trash man. I come out, I throw trash all over the ring, and then I start eating garbage.
Who are eating garbage all over the field. And of course, we have our wild cards.
Wild card, bitches! Yeah!
Who are capable of anything. I will start us off with, of course, the obvious choice for five-star man. And I say the obvious choice. Yeah. There were many obvious choices for five-star men in this game. The Chiefs had a lot of players play fantastically in this game, which would you blow out a playoff team by 20 points after they've spotted you a 24-point deficit? Sure, you're going to have a lot of five-star men, but I'll go with Patrick Mahomes. 23 of 35 passing, 321 yards, 5 touchdowns, no interceptions. And then, of course, you mentioned it, the signature 21-yard run, 7 rushing attempts in this game for 53 yards. I mean, we would obviously go on over the years to come to learn. In fact, in the very next game, we'll get probably the most iconic run of Patrick Mahomes'
that's right.
career. But
that's right.
You know, this is a guy who blew out his knee midway through the season. And, you know, this is 3 games in, which is the crazy part. Like, this is, we're talking about everything that happened leading up to this game and everything that's happened since. This was 3 games in. We really didn't know anything, but this was an iconic playoff performance from him. As you said, you know, like, it would be interesting to ask Patriots fans, like, how many divisional round games they remember. like vividly remember
Yeah,
from
good
their
question.
dynasty run. I don't know. I don't know what the
That
answer
aren't
would be.
losses.
Sure.
Because
Right.
I'm sure they
Exactly.
remember when they blew it.
Right.
But like,
Exactly.
yeah, most of their magic came at the end. Yeah.
But
Like the end of the runs, like the Super Bowls. Yeah.
and this game, and I mean, you mentioned, I mean, there just are points in this game. The toe drag touchdown with five defenders between Pat and Travis.
Insane.
You know what I mean? Like, that's burned in my memory forever.
Mm-hmm.
It's never going to go away. So this was, and I mean, I guess too, we haven't, you know, we touched on this a little bit, but obviously, you know, with his health, for him to come out and have this game, this is like an all-time great playoff performance. And there were like six drops in this game. I mean, like the first
Yeah.
three drives all ended on balls that should have been caught. You know,
yeah.
Tyreek's, maybe you can't technically call it a drop because he got popped, but like he should have come down with that ball. You know, you add those, just even those three balls on there, he's 28 of 35 for like 400 yards and probably caps those drives with a touchdown. So,
and they kind of called the dogs off at the end too.
They
I mean,
did,
they it was masterful in from, you know, the moment the Chiefs quit shooting themselves in the foot until they realized they were up 20 and everything was all good. Patrick was perfect. He was perfect. There wasn't a, and perfect on the sidelines, perfect in his demeanor, perfect in execution.
Right.
I mean, he was as fully formed of a ultimate weapon in football that you can possibly be in this game. And I mean, of all the five-star awards we've given him, and we've given him a lot, he is the award is basically his to lose every game. This one, he earned it as easily as he had earned it in any of the others. He was perfect. So yes, good call there. I'll go to his running mate, his best friend, his brother, his partner in crime, whatever you want to call him, his steak restaurant partner, Travis Kelce. This was Kelce's greatest fantasy football output of any game in his career. Which is a Hall of Fame, first ballot Hall of Fame, greatest tight end of all time career. He was incredible. He had 10 catches on 12 targets, which, I mean, their connection, the fact that it's not like he's a volume guy where you give him 20 targets and he's putting up these numbers. It just
Right.
works every
Right.
single time for 134 yards, three touchdowns, all in the second quarter. And a domination of the Houston linebacker core, mostly Lonnie Johnson, but everybody got their fill of Travis Kelce in this game, was just, it wasn't even vintage Travis Kelce, because no players can act like this all the time. Like, this is
Right.
not, you know,
Right.
this was his greatest game in a career, as I said, that's the greatest career tight ends ever had. This was statistically his output in a playoff game, in a have-to-have-it environment, at home. I mean, what more can you say? He was amazing. He was not only did he have 134 yards of receiving, but he was, as I mentioned in the recaps, drawing these defensive pass interference. I think he had three of them in this game for a total of like 60 yards there. So, I mean, he accounted for basically 200
Almost
yards of
200
offense
yards, yeah.
And three touchdowns. I mean, as good as it gets. And if we've ever given out a pair of five-star awards that were more well-earned than Travis Kelce and Patrick Mahomes in this game, I can't think of them. I don't know which game it would be, but they were both brilliant, and they made their legacies in part in this game.
Let's not dwell on the Trashmen, but let's hit the
Sure.
Trashmen quickly.
Sure.
Obviously, this was an iconic win for the Chiefs. I'll give the Trashman Award. My nominee goes to Tyreek Hill. He did have three catches for 41 yards in this game. The miss, probably not technically a drop, but again,
he got lit up, but he could have. He's come down with it before. Yeah.
We've seen him make that catch before.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, just a guy that, I mean, his physicality, I think, always underrated. And I was surprised that he didn't come down with that ball.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, three for 41 with that ball in there. And then the lost fumble to allow the Texans to go up 21-0. And, you know, I mean, I was thrilled when they saw him back there. Like, the entire time Tyreek Hill was
Me
the
too.
Chief, I was like,
put it back there.
Every time he gets back there, I'm excited. I'm ready to go. The crowd was excited.
Mm-hmm.
And then for him to let us down like that, fumbling the ball. I mean, I feel like that's a big part of the reason the vibes were so bad, right? Like,
yes,
you go from, all right, we need a spark. Like, we're down 14 to nothing. That's not insurmountable whatsoever. We need a spark. Tyreek's back there. And then literally he gives up a touchdown. Literally, like,
he gave worst, a spark just to the Texans.
To the Texans. Literally the worst possible thing you could do to that situation.
Yeah.
So he gets my trash, man. Sorry about that, Tyreek. We'll make it up to you.
Yes, we will. I'll go with D-Rop in this game. DeMarcus Robinson, one catch for 4 yards on four targets, three really bad miscommunications with Mahomes, one early third down where, as I said, pass was there. Just classic D-Rop. You know, I don't like to trash the guy too much, but he had his really bad moments with his team, and this is as bad as his career probably was. And then I'll just, like you said, let's not dwell on trash, man. Let's just move right through it. We don't really care about dogging the Chiefs when they just came up with one of the greatest wins in franchise history. So I'll move right on to wild cards. And I want to bring up Justin Reed in this. You know, we name Chiefs players as these awards, but in this case, he was a Houston Texan in this game. He was trying to cover Travis Kelce. That didn't super work very well, but as we saw, that didn't work for anybody on the Texans. He got the direct snap on the fake punt, and what was really funny and fun about that play in hindsight was that one of the angles later after the play was over showed Justin Reed pacing back and forth behind the line, and Dirty Dan just mirror image right with him on the defense or on the special teams defensive side, just watching him. He knew Justin Reed was trying to get up to something. And then they must've just still had the call on. I forget really after the game, if Bill O'Brien said something about their decision-making and that if they saw something that they liked or whatever, but they ran the fake punt. Dirty Dan snuffed out Justin Reed. And then, of course, Justin Reed was so shook by this that he wanted to come join the good guys and be Kansas City Chief and win Super Bowls with the Kansas City Chiefs. So that's pretty wild card behavior there, to lose so badly that you go join the team that crushed you and be really good for that team. It's not like Justin Reed was a bad player. He wasn't a bad player with Houston, and he certainly has been a great player with the Chiefs. So he gets my wild card for this one.
I like it. We got to end with the ultimate wild card of this era of Chiefs football. And, you know, sometimes the wild card, a lot of times the wild card is for a player with an up and down performance. But sometimes the wild card is for an up and down player who comes through when you least expect it. And I feel like I gave this exact speech the last time we gave this guy the wild card, but yeah, he's on a heater. Dirty Dan Sorensen, come on down. Not only was he special teams ace in this game. I mean, he literally played almost every single snap on defense and on special teams in this game. Not only did he come up with the fourth down stop of the aforementioned Justin Reed on, you know, huge, just one of the largest momentum shifting plays of the game. Sure. Not only did he come up with turnover, or essentially force that out, not only did he blitz the quarterback five times, he had zero missed tackles in this game. I mean, this was quite literally one of the greatest games of Dan Sorensen's NFL career.
Gotta be the greatest.
I mean, 100% of the defensive snaps, 80 defensive snaps in this game, 29 special team snaps. That's 78% of the special team snaps. And when you account for the fact that the Chiefs were kicking, what, how many extra points in this game?
Seven extra points in a field
goal. Plus a field goal. Yeah. I mean, you take those snaps out, that accounts for almost, I mean, he's literally on almost every single special teams play that wasn't a kick. I mean, the coverage units, he would have been on for literally almost every single snap that he could possibly play in this game. And he played out of the world. I mean, this was, again, probably the greatest game of his NFL career. And let's be honest, I mean, you mentioned it. I mean, Chiefs legend Dan Sorensen, I feel like that's appropriate. You know, legends are not always perfect 100% of the time. They're legends because their reputations shine so brightly, and we remember their heroic deeds. And we remember sometimes their missteps. You know, King Arthur, not necessarily the greatest guy. You know, he's out there sleeping around with other people's wives and... I didn't expect to be talking about King Arthur, and I'm actually a little bit rusty on the story, whether it was Lancelot that actually slept with his wife. Anyway.
Everybody was sleeping with everybody back then.
Sure, exactly. But you get the point. The point is that he may not have always been perfect, but in this game he was, and that makes him the ultimate wild card. We'll see you guys next week. It's always Sunny in Chiefs Kingdom.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.